This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 24 for June 11th, 2008, the blogging episode. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Thirsty Developer. I'm Dave Bost.
And I'm Larry Clarkin.
And we're back. At least I'm back.
Yeah, welcome back, Dave. You had a couple of episode hiatus from us, and we missed you.
Oh, and I missed you. I missed the Thirsty Developers as well.
Yeah, I got to tell you, the hardest thing about this show while you were gone is doing banter by yourself. Because you don't have that nice laugh track in the back when the other person's talking. So
did you like at least like put up a mirror so it felt like you were talking to somebody at least?
No, it was the quietest, you know, scariest situation I'd ever been in, and I should publish the whole, you know, banter that I recorded because I screwed up everything at least 10 times. But we got a couple episodes posted without you. I hope you caught up and listened to them.
Absolutely, of course I did.
We had a great Virtual Earth interview, and then we had Ed Glass from the Visual Studio team on talking about web load testing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so it took a little time off, and it's good to be back.
So, Dave, why don't you tell us what you were doing when you were off for a couple of weeks? CodeFest, I think you called it?
Yeah, so we're working on these events. It's essentially what we're trying to do is, you know, as people may or may not know, Microsoft is coming up to the end of their fiscal year, which ends June 30th, and we're just trying to get some events, you know, in line before the end of the year so we can start looking towards the next year's kind of, you know, event planning and stuff. So what we're doing in the month of June here is we actually are starting this instructor-led lab roadshow, essentially, that we're calling CodeFest. So the idea is that, just gather a bunch of people together, you know, bring your laptops, we'll provide, you know, the lab content, and we'll just kind of walk through a couple, you know, two or three labs as a group, and where we can all learn the different technologies around Visual Studio and .NET 3.5 as a group. And I think it's better for people to get their hands on the code and get their hands dirty with the technology to learn much better than, you know, just somebody talking to you, you're blue in the face, kind of, you know, in a typical presentation setting. So it's an idea just to get people's hands on the code. And we're running these events, you know, Chicago, Madison, Milwaukee, Indianapolis. And actually, I don't know if this show would be posted in time, but on Wednesday, June 11th, we're actually going to be doing sort of these virtual CodeFest events in Second Life of all places. So we're kind of taking this idea of where they did these, we had the virtual launch event in Second Life, and it went over, you know, pretty well. I was thinking of sort of doing the same type of thing of, you know, expanding our reach to a much broader audience, you know, inside of the virtual world of Second Life, and utilizing also MSDN Virtual Labs to kind of do the same sort of process of going through these instructor-led labs where people can learn, get their hands on the code, and then have access to people to answer questions. So we're going to be doing that in Second Life on June 11th in sort of combination with the Second Life .NET Developers Group.
Yeah, and I would say that people who are interested in, you know, who are not, you know, in Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, who aren't in Second Life, can also get a lot out of this. If you go to daveboss.com, your blog, you've actually got all the resources for you to do these hands-on labs yourself. And the labs are actually, you found them from a couple different places, but the actual step-by-step are all there. So if you're interested in doing this and you're not in our, you know, immediate area where you can come to an in-person event, you can't get to the Second Life event, you can still get a lot out of the CodeFest.
That's right. Yeah, so they can go up to my blog and, you know, download the content. It's a lot of good stuff, and hopefully we'll have more of these events and we'll have more of these labs available. So, you know, keep it on the blog.
And speaking of blogs, that's our topic for today, right?
What a segue master you are.
Yeah, I saw that one come in for like, you know, about a minute and a half.
Yeah, so yeah, you had a chance to sit down with some of our friends down in Indianapolis.
Yep, I was down there for our Arc Ready event about a month ago, about 4 weeks ago, and I got a chance to sit down with Dan and Jeff, and they've both been on the show, you know, as a blog you should know in the past. So who better to talk to than two of my favorite bloggers? I've got them both subscribed in, you know, my RSS Bandit, and I read every post that they've got. What was neat is that Dan and Jeff have different styles of blogging. Dan's much more technical, much more code, and Jeff's more, kind of theoretical, more thoughtful post. And I thought that was kind of a nice style. But, you know, we sat down with them, and we talked about all the tools they use and the techniques that they use as part of their blogging.
Great. So let's listen into your interview with Jeff and Dan.
Hi, this is Larry Clarkin, and I'm in Indianapolis, Indiana. I just got finished with my ArcReady session here, and I'm actually in the room with two of my favorite bloggers, Jeff and Dan. Can you guys introduce yourself and then tell us what your blog is?
My name is Jeff Mosier. I'm at Developer Interactive Intelligence, and my blog is Mosierware, MOSERWARE.com.
I'm Dan Rigsby, and I also work at Interactive Intelligence. I'm a lead software engineer there. Been there for about 8 years, and my blog is danrigsby.com.
So normally I ask people towards the end of the interview, you know, what their blog is, but this podcast is actually about, you know, you as a technical person, you know, blogging and kind of what you can get out of it. You know, and since you guys are two of my favorite bloggers, I wanted to have you guys on the show. And I actually started blogging years ago before I came to work for Microsoft. I was an enterprise architect. And unfortunately, you can't find that blog anymore because it was an internal blog. But I got a lot out of it. And then when I actually, you know, joined Microsoft, I said, well, you know, I need to have, you know, a very public blog. But let me ask you guys, you know, tell me about your history of blogging. Dan, when did you start? Kind of what was your motivation?
Okay. I actually started a blog a couple of years ago, but didn't really keep it up to date. And I've been hounded over the years to try to brain dump more of my ideas. So I started again more heavily in December. And originally it was more to give myself an outlet for ideas. I can't remember everything that I do, so more recording, you know, ideas that I have or thoughts that I have. And I noticed over time that when I wanted to learn a new technology, you know, I'd create all these sample programs and I'd have to file them away in my documents folder somewhere. And very quickly I realized that would be a better outlet for creating blog ideas. And so over time my blog kind of shifted and motivated to, you know, kind of what I'm learning at that point in time.
And Jeff, same question to you.
Mine was a little bit different approach. I started a personal blog when I got engaged back in 2004. So that blog tended to focus more on family and things, but I really wanted to have kind of an outlet for a technical perspective. And I was finding out that my family and my in-laws, they didn't like that so much. So I realized I needed to start another one. So I started a technical blog back in November. Just as a way to try to get better at writing was my big one, is because I realized I was really weak at it, and I saw a lot of other great bloggers like Spolsky and Atwood and Graham that I thought that it would give me an opportunity to get better there.
Yeah, I think anybody who is a technical blogger has somebody that they, you know, kind of look up to. And it's funny that you mentioned, you know, Spolsky and Atwood, because I would say that they're you know, probably two of my favorite bloggers. I mean, I read both of those guys pretty much when they put out a post. I read it, but you can get a lot of inspiration. I got to ask though, I didn't realize that you just started your blog a few months ago, because you've got like 500 something subscribers on FeedBurner, right?
Right. Yeah.
Do you have that big of a family?
I think it's just my mom and my mother-in-law maybe hitting the RSS thing every day, but no, it's kind of got out of control. So,
well, cool. So one of the things that, you know, one of the reasons that I blog is, you know, and a lot of people think that, you know, if you work for Microsoft that you're required to blog. Absolutely not true. You know, there's plenty of guys that I work with in the evangelism core that don't blog. But you know, I think that there's two really components to it. There's sharing, you know, your knowledge with the world, because I think I've got some interesting things to say. Maybe my readers don't, you know, feel the same way. But also, I feel that I learn a lot, you know, when I'm blogging, because there's a process that you go through, you know. And you know, tell me about, you know, what kind of process that you guys go through, especially when you're, you know, publishing something that maybe on a technology that you don't necessarily know. Dan?
Actually, if I'm learning new technology and I want to blog about it, you know, a lot of times I normally don't pick up a physical book as much as I used to anymore. A lot of it does tend to be, you know, finding stuff on the web and learning from other people's examples and going forward with that. And I have found that, you know, some of the major reasons to blog are, as you said, you know, to share ideas and to help you learn. But a lot of people out there blog just to help others. And, you know, even with WCF, as I started to learn that more and more, I found that, you know, a good outlet for that is MSDN forums. So I spent a lot of time on the forums, you know, helping people with their own problems and learning in the process, and then turning a lot of those responses into full blog posts and expanding on those quite a bit. So it's helped me learn things in a number of different ways.
Jeff?
early on, I tried to follow Atwood's advice of keeping a schedule, and my original schedule was once a week. And I found that it's really hard to think of something new or interesting once a week, at least for me. Some people can do several ones a week, but not me. So recently, my schedule's been about once every 3 weeks, and it's really just to learn something. And for me, I'd love to do deep dives into learning something. So if you ever really look close at my posts, you'll see probably 50 to 100 hyperlinks sometimes, just because I like to dig deep into topics, and usually it's just blog to learn something.
It's kind of interesting that you mentioned, you know, your cadence or whatever, because I remember, and one of the reasons I came with the idea of, like, you know, hey, I'll be an indie, I'm going to talk to Jeff and Dan, was your Twitter, your tweets, you know, on this blog post that you were writing about Moore's Law.
Right.
And this is like, you know, if you're familiar with Springsteen, this is like the jungle land of blog posts. This is the, you know, this is the 9 minute, you know, song at the end of the show that just goes on and on.
You can't sleep. Read this.
Yeah. This is like the Freebird of blog posts, you know. Tell us a little bit about that, because you actually published it in three parts, and it was, and each one was big in that, yeah. You know.
If you ever read Steve Yeag's blog, he works for Google, and he's known for kind of writing really long blog posts. But I love them because they're like essays, and they like to go deep. So I looked at some of his posts that kind of the world deemed as really long, and they were about 4,500 words. And as I was going into this topic of, you know, how does Moore's Law apply to software, and not from a multi-core perspective, but from an expressibility perspective based off some conversations I had with some others, I just kept finding more and more I wanted to say to kind of get that whole thought there. And I hit, I think it was about 6,300 words, and I'm talking to Dan. I'm like, Dan, no one's going to read this if it's one post. And he kept not forcing me, but twisting my arm, saying, you got to break it up. And then I realized no one would read 6,300 words probably in one setting, that I went ahead and broke that up into three parts.
So another thing that you mentioned a minute ago was the fact that, you know, you're trying to be on a cadence, and you had trouble coming up with, blog post ideas once a week. Mm-hmm. Dan and I were talking earlier, before you got here, that we actually have the opposite problem. And maybe I'll ask Dan to respond to this, but I told him my methodology for when I have an idea for a blog post, mm-hmm. what I do is I create an Outlook task. Hmm. Actually, what I honestly do is I have usually it happens to me in the weirdest spot, so I'll actually pull out my mobile phone,
yeah.
and I'll send myself an email, you know, saying, you know, blog idea, linear thinking. Right. Which was a conversation I was having with Josh Holmes recently about, you know, how do you break that, you know, linear thinking that I think this way. And I'll turn it into a task, and if I need to research it, you know, I'll go put the notes right in the body of the task. Right. Well, I checked last night. I have 102 blog ideas. So, and that was after pruning. So there were some things, yeah. I went through, and I said, oh, well, that was I was going to get some thoughts on an announcement, but turns out it was 3 months ago, so it's not worth doing anymore.
Right.
So I pruned it down to 102.
Yeah, I mean, I do something similar. I use Google Notebook for that, and I think I've published on my blog probably 25 posts, but my backlog is probably 50.
Okay.
So they kind of sit there.
So you're set for the next year, according to your cadence schedule there, yeah.
But a lot of times I coalesce several of those. So I'll say, oh, there's one idea. Oh, well, I don't want to do a whole post on that, so I'll just bring that one snippet in.
And Dan, what's your backlog right now?
I have probably close to 50 to 60 ideas, and like Jeff, I do keep my ideas in a Google Notebook, but that tends to be more of a staging area. And then I use a Windows Live Writer, and I very quickly turn those into drafts. And I keep those drafts going over time. Even during your ARC Ready session today, I published two blog posts during that time. One was about the event, and another about the Worldwide Telescope that was just released.
Yeah, so you're a big live blogger then?
I tend to live blog. Part of my motivation for blogging, especially about events, is I like to take notes. For one, it helps me, because so I have something to refer to, but also because I tend to either fall asleep or get maybe disinterested in some particular topics, especially if it's something I already know a little bit about. And, you know, forcing me to kind of blog about it and keep those notes really helps me out as well. But also in an event like today, there were a few people at Interactive Intelligence who wanted to attend today but had forgotten about it or didn't know about it. So to capture those notes to give to them, you know, is invaluable as well.
Well, it's also that, you know, you're sharing, which I think is a big motivation for blogging. But also you've got that your own notes there, right? So you can go back to it. I actually published a blog post that I didn't actually make it public. I mean, it's one of the things – we'll talk about tools in a second here. Mm-hmm. But in the blogging engine that I use, you can actually have something that's just visible to you. And the steps to rebuild my laptop, you know, because I do it pretty frequently because I download a lot of betas and, you know, and I've got this whole, you know, perfectionist thing that, ooh, caught an error in some DLL. Oops, nope, let's reinstall Windows, you know. I'm building a Hyper-V machine right now, but I think that'll make it more frequent, updates as opposed to fewer. So I actually documented the steps, step by steps, with every hyperlink and all the tools that I put on my laptop. And actually, I ought to just go ahead and make that public anyway. But let's go ahead and talk about tools. So you mentioned LiveWriter, but what's your actual blogging engine?
I use WordPress, and on my site, much like you, Larry, on the About page, I have a list of all the tools and products that I use on the blog and then kind of a cost at the end. And I think my blog costs about $60 per year. That's after the domain register and the cost of hosting the site, et cetera. But I use my domain registers, GoDaddy. It tends to be cheap, and they're all just about the same. Hosting company, I use ReliableSite.net. They offer both ASP, PHP, as well as MySQL, and a SQL Server, which is necessary for WordPress. And then WordPress for the blogging software. Use Feedburner as an aggregator. Google Analytics to pull a lot of statistics about who's using my site. And then Windows Live Writer as my blog writing system. And then finally, I think an important thing to have on your blog is some kind of license, so that especially when you have code, because people who are looking at your code may want to reuse it or adjust it to their needs. If there's not a license there, they may either just assume there is no license or just avoid the site completely because they don't understand how they can make the code and use it for their own. So I use a Creative Commons license that's available on the site.
So it's interesting. I use Creative Commons also. I use the, you know, attribution one.
Mm-hmm.
On my photos, I actually use attribution, non-commercial, you know, no derivatives, share and share alike. I wanted to get every like variation that I could. But it's interesting. I've actually heard from some people, and I haven't dug into it, but they say that Creative Commons is not necessarily appropriate for code. And I actually use, and the couple times that I've published code on my blog, I've actually used, there's a Microsoft permissive license that you can use, which is basically an open source, you know, go forth and enjoy kind of license. You can do whatever you want with it as long as you point back to the original source. And if you make modifications, you're not required to republish the code. So it'd be interesting that I one of the things on my to-do list is to find out why Creative Commons is not necessarily appropriate. But I've actually heard that from a legal type person.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see that too. I know that on CodePlex, I use that same license for Microsoft that you're talking about for my projects off there.
Yeah, and I absolutely love Creative Commons. I just love the very concept of it because, you know, it's making very public. It's like, here's what you can do with my works. The nice thing about it is that a lot of people kind of misunderstand Creative Commons, and I was talking to some guys about this last week, is you're not giving up your copyrights. You know, it's you're giving up certain rights. All the other rights are still reserved for that, you know. So you heard Dan's welcome to Creative Commons talk, but we got a little bit of tangent. I wanted to ask you, Jeff, about the tools you use. Is it pretty much the same as Jeff's, or?
Dan's? Mine's probably a little bit more ad hoc, and so I use GoDaddy, I use Google Analytics, Feedburner, those. But my primary hosting is Blogger, blogger.com. It's Google, so it's a free. It's not new. My personal blog is WordPress, so it gives you a little bit more features. But for my tech blog, it's not so much of a big deal for me. So the Blogger features were fine. I use SkyDrive to post things like code that you can download or large. Let's see, so for the images, that's kind of integrated into Blogger, so it's like the Picasa and things like that. But what I'm like I said earlier, when I'm composing something, I'll start in Notebook, Google Notebook, and then I'll transition to LiveWriter. And then my last check is I copy all that and paste it into Word 2007 because I like the little blue squiggly lines in case I make a grammar mistake or something.
Yeah, so not only spell checking, which is in LiveWriter, but you know, you get the addition. It's actually probably a more rich spell checking dictionary, yeah. And you get the grammar check.
Yeah, and I definitely look at the word count because I get a little bit nervous if it gets too high. My problem is I tend to go long, so I try to cut as much as possible.
So you actually not only I'm going to call you out a little bit, but you not only checked the word count, but I saw that you were, and this was again on your Twitter message, that you were actually checking the reading level.
Yeah.
Of the, you know, tell us a little bit about that.
Just in general, when you're writing, you want to keep the reading level, you know, not above like sixth grade or whatever. That's probably standard for a newspaper or something like that. So if it gets too high, then you're probably sounding, you know, more complicated than you need to be. So.
And how do you actually check that? Is there?
Another tool that I sometimes use is Google Docs. It has that built in. What I like about Google Docs is it's kind of like a wiki entry. It auto archives everything. So if I'm just adding maybe a paragraph, it'll auto save that. And then in the tools menu, it will show you the statistics. But Word Grammar Check does that as well.
Oh, it does? Okay.
At the end of it, it says, you know, here's your readability statistics.
Okay, so that, you know, it never fails that somebody mentions something to me as a Microsoft employee that the Microsoft tool does that I didn't know that. I have a funny story about reading level. You know, if I could digress and make this about Larry for a second. It was a few years ago. I had created a document when I was an architect, and it was here's how we develop web applications at our company. And, you know, we put a lot of time it wasn't just me. It was a couple of guys I worked with. You know, we put this together, and it was like, basically, here's the 28 pages that if you're coming in as a consultant, mm-hmm. you know, or you're new to the company, this is how we build web applications. And we were pretty proud of it. We actually had a tech writer come in and do, you know, the fit and finish kind of stuff on that. And he had the document for like 3 hours, and he sent me an email that, you know, said a number of different things. And he said, and you're writing at the eighth grade level. And I wanted to hit reply and go, well, you know, screw you, right? and actually,
it's actually a bit high for me.
I almost, you know, did this, right? And then I reread his email and I realized that it was a compliment. And he actually had said that for a technical document, mm-hmm. you want to be, you know, at most at the eighth grade level. And he said, I was like the 7.98. Mm-hmm. eighth grade level, you know, it was as close to eight as you could get. He said, basically it was, as a tech writer, it was the biggest compliment he could give. And I was all offended by it. So, but I mean, that's an interesting thing because I mean, you know, all manner of people, you know, could stumble on your blog and you want to make it as understandable as possible. So.
Yeah. And in the Google Analytics, you can see people when they go to like a Google Translate or Babelfish or whatever, you can see the language pair. So they'll say, EN to ZH, so someone in China is using some translation service to read your blog, or Brazilian, Portuguese, French, German. I've seen a couple of those, so
yeah,
it helps with them.
It really creeps me out when I realize that we, you know, we have a worldwide audience. We actually ran into that with the Thirsty Developer. We're running a Zoom contest, and it'll be announced as part of this episode too. The first response we got was from some guy in Australia, and it was a town I'd never heard of. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, we better quit talking about just Chicago stuff and
right.
Milwaukee stuff, and you know, and we try to make this podcast as global as possible. And
yeah, one thing that really shocked me was I had this blog post where I tried to test the memory of people, saying how well can you memorize stuff, and I put the letters of like Texas, TEXAS, and people would, I call it chunking. They would chunk it as one thing, Texas. Well, some guy in China wrote about it and changed all of my illustrations to like Chinese provinces. And I only found that out because I used a translating service to read what he wrote in Chinese about.
Well, that's good. Yeah, that's so cool.
That was kind of weird, but cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you both mentioned LiveWriter. And, you know, I try not to be a Microsoft fanboy, but that is probably the best piece of software that Microsoft writes right now. And I absolutely.
It's one of the first .NET apps, too.
Yeah, one of the from a live standpoint that we're distributing like that, but it is just so cool. I used to blog in Word and Notepad, and I had this process where I would do it in Word, mm-hmm. And I use DOSBlog as my blogging engine, which is the, you know, great open source project that Scott Hanselman, you know, is the new version today. Oh, so gotta go do the upgrade, you know. But they have an editor on the site there, you know, actually built into the web page. I would write it up in Word. I would paste it in a Notepad so the Word HTML formatting would get lost, and then I would, you know, paste it into DOSBlog, mm-hmm. and then do some fit and finish stuff on it. And now I just hit publish, you know, right from LiveWriter. It's really cool. So, you know, next question is that, Dan, you do code in your blog, and what's kind of your, you know, mentality about how do you keep the code readable, manageable, you know, because if you actually paste production code in there, there's a bunch of stuff, and by production, I don't mean from your company or whatever, mm-hmm. but production-worthy stuff. You're going to have comments, you're going to have, you know, exception handling, you may have dependency injection, you know, attributes on there, and it becomes to the point where it's like, well, I'm trying to demonstrate 3 lines of code, but, you know, because I'm trying to show a good sample, it's going to have 25. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, with LiveWriter, it's nice because LiveWriter is a very pluggable architecture, so you can get plugins to add anything you want. There are a number of different plugins out there for plugging in code. I forget the name of the one I use, but the nice thing about it is if it's a short snippet, I can have it all in line where it actually just kind of go down row by row. But if it's a longer, like if it's a full class and I'm going to have the full class definition in the namespaces, I'll make sure that that's always in a container that's at least scrollable, because I know that one will kind of carry on and on. But one of the most important things is to always, when you're building these projects or these sample projects that are going to go out on the web, is to make sure that, you know, you zip them up and you post links to the site so that people can download those and deal with them, especially with comments in your code. A lot of times the comment's very relative. You know, I'll keep that in the code that gets posted on the site, but maybe like the /XML docs won't be there. But the stuff that actually zip up and post, those will have the /XML docs that contain more of the comments and remarks.
So you actually create 2 versions of it. The, you know, here's the one I'm shipping you if you want to build on it or whatever. But also here's like the snippet version.
Yeah, actually I create the project and all the zipped up code first, and then right before I post it or while I'm posting, I'll go in and strip out all the extraneous data, such as the extra XML docs that don't matter, or maybe simplify some of the code. Like if it's a property, instead of having, you know, the get and set and having the squigglies on separate lines, maybe try to condense that into a single line for readability.
Cool. So you mentioned the LiveWriter plugin. Are there any other plugins that you use?
Yeah, there's one I use that's kind of neat. It's a Polaroid plugin. Like if I'm at an event and I'm posting pictures, I like the Polaroid plugin because it allows you to kind of turn the images a little bit so they look like you just kind of threw a picture on the blog, as well as being able to put text underneath it. So it gives it more of that photograph effect. So if I'm posting about, you know, some Day of .NET event, I'll have a lot of those types of pictures as more of a photograph, where if it's a screenshot, it'll be more like an image. I also use a couple other ones. There's one for .NET Kicks. I mean, that's a great way to get some exposure, especially with .NET applications or blog posts about .NET applications, to get out there, is to post on something like .NET Kicks. So there'll be plugins that allow you to automatically post that off to that website as well.
So that's like, you know, it inserts a tag in there and
It's all about inserting HTML into your post that you're getting ready to submit.
And .NET Kicks is looking at who, you know, linked back to them or whatever. So, because I used to use Technorati, which does the same kind of thing, but I just kind of got tired of it. You know, not that Technorati is not a good service, but, you know, I was going category happy, you know, where, you know, every blog post had like 50 categories. Like if I mentioned somebody's name, and I think there was one blog post that, you know, I did around a SharePoint event where I had more tags than words in the post. And I was like,
I've seen that.
Yeah, let's, I think that was the last time I did a, you know, a Technorati type tag. So final question for you guys, you know, if, you know, what would you guys do better on your blog? And I'll give you an alternate question if you don't want to answer that one. And that is that if somebody was looking at, you know, becoming a technical blogger, you know, kind of what kind of advice would you give them?
Can I answer both?
Yeah.
What I would like to do on my blog is, believe it or not, post more. I mean, I think I've got enough ideas and enough stuff going on that I would like to post more, and I wish I was a better writer. although, you know, over the course of even just a few months, you know, your writing style gets better. I mean, whether you write magazine articles or books, I mean, you're writing at a certain level. But when you're writing for a blog, you know, as Jeff mentioned, I mean, there's a certain readability level, but there's also just a certain way that you should kind of carry yourself when you're writing on a blog, especially in a technical blog where you want to keep it very, you know, technical, keep your personal stuff out of the way there. So I'd like to just do more of that and take a lot of my ideas and just find time to express it into a blog. And if there are people out there looking to start a blog, I mean, the best way to go with it is, you know, you could start with a free service like Blogger or, you know, the WordPress version that is free. But, you know, it's a great place to start. But the most important thing is to keep consistency in branding. You know, you might want to go out and get your domain name first and make sure that you have your DNS entries pointing to that free site. So that way, if you've got, you know, mysite.com and it's on the free service and eventually you decide that you want to move it over to your own host, that DNS name will carry over. So all the links that may be going off to your site don't need to change. And that consistency is very important for more of a brand recognition of your site.
Yeah, not a big investment either, right?
Right.
For me... especially this year, kind of, I like to, my bachelor's degree is in computer science, so I like kind of looking at computer science-y stuff, and I was accused on a previous podcast of being a history nut, which is partly true.
I nailed that one. Just by reading your blog, I could tell, you know.
So I just got done reading about a 500-page book on a guy named J.C.R. Licklider, who was kind of the genesis behind a lot of the computer science related stuff for ARPANET, or for the ARPA agency back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So I just like, my goal is to not waste people's time. So if I can read a 500-page book and maybe pick the highlights, I hopefully that save people's time, but maybe encourage them to read it as well. So I guess in the upcoming time, it's going to be just kind of computer science explorations, maybe some .NET things. Advice I would give to people is find a couple people, a couple bloggers that are kind of role models, and study their writing, because I guarantee you the really good ones, they write and rewrite, and well, except Atwood, he said he only does maybe two looks over, but like Spolsky and Graham and Yeag, I'm sure they look at it over and over. So that's kind of the style that I like, but just find somebody you like and copy them.
So I've actually got a bonus question for you guys, because it's something that you guys have kind of, you know, both brought up at different points, and that is there's a great blog post that Scott Hanselman originally did called 3-2 Ways to Keep Your Blog from Sucking, you know, and we'll put a link in the show notes to it, you know, and I think it's good. There's a couple things that I disagree with on it, you know, and you know, one of them is that you mentioned the personal stuff, the, you know, and I have a family blog. That, you know, I'm not going to put pictures of my dog on my technical blog, but I don't think that you should, you know, there's a hard fast rule about never put anything personal, you know, on your technical blog, because the most read blog post that I had, most comments, you know, most feedback was actually a very personal thing. Right. And it's something that I wanted to share with, you know, people who are reading my blog, because a lot of them are my friends and you know, and some of them distant friends like you guys down in Indianapolis. But, you know, it was something that I was feeling and it was genuine about. And I think it's funny that Scott Hanselman, you know, had put the, you know, don't put personal stuff on there. And we see pictures of his kids all the time. So, yeah. sorry, Scott. I'm not calling you out too much, but... what do you guys think of 32 ways to keep your blog from sucking? Anything you disagree with? Anything that is like, yeah, if you're going to do one of the 32, that's it?
Definitely. I pretty much agree with Scott for the most part. If anything else, make sure that you have the comments on. That's probably the best appreciative feedback that I get, is just say, hey, somebody was, you know, thought enough to actually spend time to enter the CAPTCHA code and write something back. So definitely turn comments on. I think it's good to have some sort of way, at least your name on there. There are people that you don't even know their name because they use some handle or something. When people link to you, they like to write Jeff or Larry or Dan. Can't think of any ones that are flaming, jumping out at me that I disagree with.
Any of them that you really like, Dan, then, if you don't disagree with any of them?
Yeah, I have a couple that I think are big. And kind of like you, Larry, one of my most popular posts was, I posted a while back about getting my first computer when I was really young. and kind of my whole family dynamic there. A lot of the comments ended up being from family members, but I got linked from a number of other technical blogs that kind of posted back to that whole story. So I think that, yeah, you do want to keep personal information kind of out of a technical blog to a general degree unless your audience is interested. And you can judge that pretty easily based off the different levels. I mean, even with Scott Hanselman's blog, I mean, he's talking about his kids, but he still keeps it such that a good majority of his audience would be interested in that. I think that's pretty important. As far as things that Scott lists on his site that I think are pretty good, I mean, one of the biggest ones is just to know your audience. So whether you're using Google Analytics to check, you know, your bounce rate and where people are coming from, just knowing your audience is really important. And again, comments kind of plays into that too. People will let you know if your blog is starting to suck. And that's pretty important. Also, he made a good comment about not apologizing for not posting very often. You see that a lot where people be like, oh, I'm sorry I haven't posted in a couple weeks, but here's kind of what's going on. And that's kind of hard to get by.
Yeah, you should just post.
Yeah,
you
know, just post.
I went like 3 weeks. I got extremely busy without, you know, with doing stuff at work, and I hadn't written a blog post. And I actually just said, well, I'm not going to write the blog post that says I'm sorry for not blog posting. I'm just going to put the first post out there, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, you don't need a little comment on it or anything that says I'm sorry. Yeah. That's the best thing for the users. Also, make it easy to subscribe. You know, myself and many other people and more every day are using tools like Google Reader or some kind of tool that they can use to subscribe to blogs. So you want to make sure that those people can actually get at your blog. If I find a blog and I can't find out how to subscribe to it, chances are I may not come back, because if it's not in my feed, I'm doubtful that I'll remember to bookmark it and come back again later. Also, kind of monitor your bandwidth. There are a lot of great tools out there that can help you, such as FeedBurner, so that can kind of third-party bring your RSS feed to your subscribers, but also tools like Flickr so that your images don't take up all your space. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can make it so that your bandwidth gets cut down quite a bit.
Great. Those are all great suggestions. Well, I want to thank you guys for being on The Thirsty Developer. Thank you for taking your time today.
Thank you, Larry.
So, Larry, one nice thing about the Thirsty Developer podcast is that we have no problem when our interviewees shill our competing products.
Yeah, they certainly were showing Google a lot of love in that interview, weren't they?
That's right. That's okay. You know what? They got some good products, and if it's the best tool for the job, then so be it. And it just so happens to be that they do have the best tool for some of the jobs, especially, FeedBurner.
Yeah, we use FeedBurner on the Thirsty Developer and on our personal blogs because there is no, Microsoft product that even in that space at all. But I think, Jeff and Dan are both typical listeners of the show, and the fact that they're pragmatic. They're not going to align themselves to a company just for brand loyalty's sake. They're going to be loyal to a product or to a point solution. And I think a lot of our listeners are kind of in the same boat. I mean, they're going to use Microsoft products when they're appropriate, and they're going to use competing products when they're appropriate also.
Well, I guess you could say the same thing about us too. I mean, if you look, we're going to get into a blog you should know here, and this is actually the blog my blog you should know this week, and I'll save it for a minute here, but I was kind of reading an entry in there from Jeff Sandquist about how evangelist does not equal apologist, and I guess you could sort of say the same thing about us, as we're pragmatic. Even though we're evangelists for Microsoft, I mean, we use products that are not Microsoft products, and in some cases there is no sort of similar product in Microsoft's camp, and sometimes there is. And if it's not the best product, I mean, then it's our job to let the product teams know that it needs some work, and they're there to listen and hopefully make the changes to make it a better product. So, even though we're evangelists, we don't sit there and kowtow to just using Microsoft products if they're not the right ones for the job. So going back to what, Jeff and Dan were talking about and how they blog and sort of the process that they go through is, they kind of hit the nail on the head with one of the things they said is, I believe it was Jeff that said that, he was trying to blog at least once a week, and it basically turned into once every 3 weeks. Is in the fact that if you're blogging, essentially you want to make sure that you're blogging content that is, that people want to read, essentially. I kind of follow the same mantra myself, is that I don't want to regurgitate what somebody else has already said. If I got something to add to the conversation, then I'll sort of, add my own little 2 cents to the conversation. But primarily, I want to blog about stuff that, people are wanting to read, essentially. Having something thoughtful to say, and, to make sure that it's worthy of a post to send out to the world for forever at some point.
Yeah, because what they say is that if it's on the internet for 10 seconds, it's going to be there forever in one form or another.
That's right? Essentially, it is. So, I mean, it is difficult to kind of come up with sort of, you know, what is your voice? You know, what is it that you want to say? What are you going to blog about? And you know, as a, you know, in our jobs, you know, as evangelists, it becomes difficult because, and I mean, we had these conversations before, is that essentially, you know, I want my blog at daveboss.com to be full of insightful information. I don't necessarily want it to be a community calendar. And I had a feeling, you know, kind of a while back that it was turning into a community calendar, and that's okay. That's if that's what it is, that's what it is. However, in my particular case, I didn't want it to be a community calendar, but in some cases it was turned to be that way, and that's why maybe I don't blog as much as I did, because I don't want it to be a community calendar. I want it to have thoughtful, insightful information about, you know, different topics that people maybe want to read about. And maybe the
absolutely.
I guess the point is maybe I don't have a lot of thoughtful things to say. Is that's why I'm not blogging as much.
Well, if you're like me, Dave, then it's not necessarily you don't have anything thoughtful to say. It's just that to say something thoughtful takes a lot more time than to run a community calendar.
That's right.
It's really easy to say that there's this event coming up and there's, you know, and there's this great other post that somebody wrote. Go read it. That's, you know, there's an easier way to do that, and that is like so a tool like Dig or Reddit or whatever is an easy way to add your vote to, hey, go read this. It takes a while to do a really good meaty blog post. I've been working on one today. I don't know, Dave, if you've seen that I've got this you know, Architecture by Baseball series that I've been doing, where I've been comparing different things about the sport of baseball to software architecture.
That's great.
Each one of those posts takes 2-3 hours. And granted, a lot of the time is just me rewording what I want to say. That's like I know what I want to say at the beginning. But, you know, it takes a while to get your message across. And that's a real commitment to do. And I don't know how some of these guys can do a meaty post every day, like, you know, the Jeff Atwoods of the world.
Right.
You know, it's tough. But I think you got to find your own cadence, and you got to find your own voice, and you got to stick with it and be true.
Right. And I still say what's kind of, you know, kept me from blogging as much is not just because I don't have anything thoughtful to say, because I do, but it is the time, like you said. But it's also things like Twitter got in the way, you know. So because of Twitter, you know, I can just sort of say what's on my mind, or, you know, kind of keep people up to date through 140, you know, characters that I post through Twitter. And actually, that's kind of probably kept me from blogging more, is just because I'm able to, I don't know, sort of say things, what's on my mind through Twitter and sort of those 140 characters or less.
Yeah, I wonder, I bet you there's a lot of people who've kind of dropped off blogging because of the whole Twitter effect.
Right.
I think, I don't remember the original post I saw, but somebody actually was talking about how Twitter really destroyed their blog, and they actually walked away from Twitter so they could refocus on the blog. I think Gorbett mentioned that to us, Brian Gorbett, you know, one of our new developer evangelists in the district. Maybe we should get him on the show as a guest host next week, and he can tell us all about that.
Absolutely, yeah. So, Twitter's one of those things, like, you know, you have kind of a following, you know what people are, you know who the people are that are reading your kind of post, and, you know, just kind of a little plug here, if you want to follow me at Twitter, it's twitter.com/DaveBost. So,
yeah, mine's pretty easy to figure out.
That's right, so twitter.com/LarryClarkin.
Yeah, we have boring handles. We got to come up with something. Something
that's
cool.
Okay. That way people can find us. You know, that's what it's there for. So with that, why don't we move into Bloggy Chanel this week? Why don't you go first and kick it off?
Yep. One of my favorite segments of the show. Dave, as you know, I'm a big amateur photographer. If you've been to my blog, or if you've been to the Thirsty Developer one, I take most of the photos for there. And I put all my photos up on Flickr. I love Flickr. Again, that's, you know, back to the whole pragmatic thing. Microsoft's got, you know, the live properties where I can post photos, but I like the community that's been built up around Flickr, and I like some of their technology. Blog.flickr.net is their official blog, and 1% of the time they use it for outage-type information. You know, if they have some kind of network issue or some problem with their data center going on, you can always go there and get information about when Flickr will be back up. But I would say once a day they post some really interesting photos that people take. And their blog is really cool because there's very few words in it. You know, they let the photo do the talking, of course, because it's Flickr. And I picked this because one of the guys that works at Flickr had posted one yesterday that it was a picture of a little tiny chihuahua dressed up as Obi-Wan Kenobi. And my son's a big Star Wars fan, so we just thought that was the cutest thing. So blog.flickr.net, you know, it's great. It shows you photos. Occasionally they talk about new features or outage problems, but you know, they'll do like a theme, like they had one for Mother's Day recently where they showed some, you know, pictures of people's mother that have been posted. I'm sure they'll do the same thing for Father's Day this Sunday. Happy Father's Day, by the way, Dave.
Oh, thank you very much. Happy Father's Day to you too, Larry.
Thank you, sir. And your blog?
So this week, this is actually a blog that I ran across a couple weeks ago that I was pleasantly surprised by. It's a blog. It's called microspotting.com. So it's microspotting, like the paparazzi, but for geeks. It's a very interesting blog. It's by a girl named Ariel who actually works for Microsoft. And essentially what microspotting is, it's a blog where she kind of goes around and meets people. Primarily, I think they're all at Microsoft right now. I don't know if she's going to open up beyond Microsoft. But she goes around and kind of just profiles different people who work for Microsoft. And so it's, you know, they got, you know, the pictures of the people behind the names, you know, kind of, you know, like 3, 4, or 5 different questions that they ask them about, you know, who they are, what they do kind of thing. And just some various questions to dig a little bit deeper into their personality and their persona and things. So, you know, they interview people like Jeff Sandquist, who runs the channel 9, 10, 8. Groups over at Microsoft, you know, a couple people behind, you know, clip arts, you know, various other individuals. So it's definitely, if you want to get behind and know a little bit more about the people who work for, you know, sort of the so-called evil empire, if you will, these are probably names that you recognize, but you don't know who they are personally. This is kind of a great way to get to meet these people behind these names. So it's microspotting.com. Yeah.
And Ariel is an awesome photographer, by the way. She takes photos of the people that she interviews, and they're just absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
Maybe when we're out in Seattle next time, we can get her to take our photos.
Like I said, Larry, we got faces more for radio than anything else.
Yeah, definitely for podcasting, not for radio.
That's right. But it would definitely be interesting to get her on the show, and just maybe, I'm sure she's got a lot of stories behind the people she's met, you know, at Microsoft.
So does that bring us to the end of the show, Dave?
Okay, so with that, I guess we'll close out this week's show. Once again, it's great to be back. I missed everyone. And as always, we welcome each and every one of your comments. If you have any comments, concerns, or ideas for future shows, you can send an email to us at thirstydeveloper@live.com. And you can comment on each and every one of our shows by going to the different posts on thirstydeveloper.com. And as well as, you know, get in contact with both Larry and myself. You can reach Larry on his blog at LarryClarkin.com. You can reach me on my blog at DaveBoss.com. And with that, Larry, I guess we'll sign off and we'll see you next week.
Hello, everyone. This is Dave Bost. That'll be our outtake, me doing your internet control.